Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm your host, Shane Bacon. This week's episode with Mike Tirico is brought to you by Ogio. If you're in need of a golf bag, and I'm sure you are, go to ogio.com and look at their entire line from stand bag to carry bag, from bulky to light as a feather. Ogio has exactly what you need. Golf bags are the 15th club. And if you don't have the latest technology, it can make your 4 hours on the golf course unbearable. I have this Cirrus carry, and I absolutely love it. It's lightweight, it's easy to lug around, and I can't imagine not using my Ogio bag for 18 holes. Get yourself to ogio.com, O-G-I-O.com, and make the switch. Trust me, you'll be a happy, happy golfer. And here we are. It's Open Week, one of my favorite weeks of the entire year, one of the most fun championships to watch, mostly because if you're in the States, you get to wake up early, you get to have coffee and watch golf on your couch or in your bed, depending on how you do it. You get to knock all of it out by about 2 or 3 p.m., and then you get to go play golf on the weekend. So you get to watch a championship and play golf after. And if you don't do that, you're doing it wrong. Trust me, just do this. I'm telling you, I love the late night West Coast. I mentioned this on the podcast with Mike, but one of my favorite times is when the great groups go off really, really early in the coverage. So on the West Coast, it's like 10 p.m., and you can actually, if you and a buddy go to a bar, you can go to a bar and watch it till about 1, go home, take a little bit of a nap, you always need that nap, and then get back up and boom, golf's still on. I don't think my TV ever switches away from it. I think my TV is on NBC and Golf Channel for basically 150 straight hours or something like that, and I get really excited about it. I kind of hope we see a big name win this thing, and I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, we need, you know, Spieth and Rory, blah, 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 but I would like to see one of those guys win this championship just for the game. We've had 7 straight, you know, first-time major winners, 7 straight different names of major winners that have never done it before. And, you know, they've been a fun list. I mean, there's some great players in there. I mean, you can include Jason Day in there. He was the first of this list. But I would like to see a Rory or a Spieth or a DJ or Jason, somebody like that, or a Phil. I just would like to see it for golf. I'd like to see it change up a little bit, and we have somebody that's already won a major before. But who knows? We'll see. I've got a bet with No Laying Up where the loser has to wear a male romper in a golf round upcoming. So that'll be something fun. Check us out and who we pick on Twitter. Of course, you can follow him at No Laying Up and follow me at Shane Bacon. Our newsletter's pumping out. We have a Claret Jug on the banner this week, which is kind of fun. And I'm going to spoil you guys something. My mom does all my Photoshopping. That's true. I don't live in a basement, but my mother does do most of my Photoshop work. So shout out to Eliza Bacon. But check out the newsletter. You can subscribe if you go to my Twitter account at Shane Bacon and click on the link to subscribe right there. And we will be hosting the Boys Amateur on FS1 this week as well. So you can check that out, DVR it, catch up with it throughout the day when you're not catching on the open coverage. But it was a fun week this week at the U.S. Women's Open. Hosted a couple days, was on course a couple days. And let me just tell you, walking a golf course with gear for 18 holes when it's 100 degrees, it gets kind of hot. It really does. And also, one more thing. If you're at a golf event and you're drinking and you see an on-course reporter and you yell at them, hey, I want to get interviewed, or hey, interview my buddy, it's not funny. Doesn't make any on-course reporter ever laugh. And when you hear it for about the 35th time in the day, it just gets a little bit old. So maybe don't do that. That's something maybe you don't need to do. It's like yelling, get in the hole, or mashed potatoes. Let's just stop doing that. Enough of me. Let's get right to it. A really special guest. I mean, one of the best in the business, if not the best in the business. One of my favorite people to listen to call golf and really any sport. And he was kind enough to join me across the pond for a good 30, 35 minutes. And we welcome into the clubhouse Mike Tirico, hosting his 21st Open Championship. 21st Open. You're going to be hosting the coverage Thursday, Friday on Golf Channel. That's 1:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then Saturday, you guys go 4 to 7 on Golf Channel, 7 to 3 on NBC, and very similar on Sunday, 7 to 2 p.m. on NBC. Are you guys going to sleep, or is sleep just kind of out of the question now?
Sleep's not needed over here. Come on. You lived here enough to know that this time of year in July, the sun goes down and then just takes a nap and comes right back up. So, dark 30 here is old light 30. The sun's up and you're ready to go early. So, these are cool weeks. This is, Chris Fowler is a really good friend. And Chris just finished up another great job doing Wimbledon and the tennis. And we worked together for all 25 years at ESPN. So, we've known each other for 27 years, I think, now. And I texted Chris before Wimbledon. And he texted me back. He said, thanks for wishing us well. This never gets old. When you come here, you're as excited as the first time. And that is exactly the way I feel about coming to the Open. This is the 21st, and I got off the plane Sunday morning, came out to the golf course and walked the golf course, and I was just as excited as I was in 97 when I was at my first one at Troon. It just gets in your blood, and it feels special. So sleep is optional, not needed, and thankfully we've got the hours to take care of that with Golf Channel and NBC this week.
Yeah, you know, I've always said this, you know, living over there in the summer when I got out of college, it doesn't really ever get like dark. It gets midnight blue, you know, for about 5 hours in the summer,
right?
But it doesn't get dark, right? Like, you can still play. I finished up at St. Andrews a year ago at 11 p.m I literally was playing the 18th hole at 11 p.m
I just told somebody, Shane, who has never been here, I said, here's what you need to do. At some point you need to go to the 16th hole at like 9 o'clock on Thursday or Friday night, and some guys are finishing up their round. And there's garbage pickup. There are seagulls. Everything's going on that's cleaning up. And these guys are hitting shots in a major championship. And it's just so unique that you get it out here. And they're kind of out here by themselves. And invariably, we've all been there when it's 9:40 and darkness is settling in. And it's been a long day. And there are guys who are trying to finish up their rounds. And as you go farther north up to Scotland, especially you get up towards Turnberry and up there, you start to get these places where this time of year you can legitimately play a hole at that late hour. And it is just so neat. It's different. I've said this 1,000 times. You lived it, like I said. If you have the wherewithal, if you have the ability once in your life to come over here to play golf, do it. Do it with people who you love playing with. Do it with people who love the game, because it puts something in you that you will never lose, and that is a connection with the true roots of the sport. It's just special.
It is special. This week, of course, is a special major championship. And I wanted to start by asking you this, and you've already said it, so I think I know your answer. But for people on this side of the pond, do you say Open Championship or do you say British Open? Because I feel like it's a heated debate. It always pops up this time of year.
It's hysterical. Neil Best, who is a writer for New York Newsday, I think he just did a story this week on this exact topic. And he interviewed me about it a while ago. People always say, why can't you say the British Open? Well, here's the deal. If I go into this massive merchandise building that's temporarily constructed here, I can't find anything that says British Open. If you gave me £1,000 and said, bring me back something that says the British Open, 2017, Royal Birkdale, I have to go get it made. They just don't sell it. That's not what they call the event here. They call the event the Open Championship, now the Open. I liked it better, candidly, when it was the Open Championship. Faldo had a great line that it's gone from the British Open to the Open Championship to the Open, that it'll be just the in the next couple of years. But that's what they call it. That's what they call it, their event. If you wanted to call the World Series the Baseball Championship of America, the people at MLB are like, no, it's the World Series. So you call it by that name. You say, this is the name of our event. Call it as such. It's not known as the British Open anywhere else around the world. They know it as the Open Championship, or now the organizers would like us to call it the Open. I'm beginning to respect. I respect how they want it called, and I'm just trying to do that along the way. And then when somebody said, you know, why not just say the British Open? I said, because it's not what they call it here. So We know what the event is. I'm happy to do the linguistics dance with you, and we'll just move on from there.
Yeah, you know, I think the most heat I've ever got on the internet, which is obviously a place that's pretty hot most of the time, is I wrote a piece, basically, this was probably 5 or 6 years ago, I wrote something, I think it was for Yahoo, and it was about how I call it the British Open, and, you know, I made these points, and let me tell you, people were not happy with it, and it made me flip. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm wrong. I can take my lumps and go with it, and I'm an Open guy now, so I'm with you. You mentioned Royal Birkdale. It's not, maybe I'd say, the most well-known kind of on the Open rota. I mean, you know, it's not St. Andrews. It's not Turnberry. It's not Muirfield, but it's a great golf course. There have been some great championships there. Give us, you know, I know you just got off the golf course. Give us your 10,000-foot explanation of what this golf course is like compared to some of the other ones, and what type of player you feel like is going to have an advantage this week.
Well, I'm going to turn that question back to you when I'm done. I'm curious your thoughts on just the course, because I know you've experienced the courses in the rota over here. I think it's the best one in England. The golf course, Dan Hicks and I just walked the golf course. I walked yesterday with some other folks. I so wanted to play golf after I got done walking the course. And maybe that says it best to the people who listen to this podcast. You go someplace and you just want to grab an iron and hit a shot. And that's what this golf course does. It's built amongst the sand dunes. You feel like on greens and a few fairways, but mostly the green complexes, you feel like you're alone. There's sand dunes all surrounding many of them. It's great for spectators, but you just have this very closed-in feeling. Now, it can get claustrophobic, I think, if you're, like me, a 12 who would struggle to play to that on a championship-level course, and you're having a hard time hitting it exactly straight. But when you're dialed in, the golf course just keeps you right refined in your little tunnel, and you're playing golf. From a perspective of winning, it's par 70. You don't see a par 5 until the 15th hole, as rare as you get in the sport. And I think, Shane, because of that, it brings a lot of people into play. You don't have the overpowering nature of the course where the guys who drive it have a chance to put up a couple of easy birdies on the first nine. So you have a little bit of that factoring in. And I think because there are not as many drivers hit here, Rory's talked about not hitting a driver until he gets to the middle of the back nine. Some guys are talking about, hey, max 4 or 5 drivers in a round if the wind doesn't change from the prevailing wind. And it's not that windy right now. I think that brings everybody in play. If you can hit 2 iron here, you can hit a hybrid here or 3 or 5 wood to these locations on the golf course. Then it becomes a second shot golf course. And I think once it becomes a second shot golf course, it brings more guys into play. So this is not one where I'm just going to hit driver, bomb it, and overpower everybody. That's not necessarily the case here. The rough is not bad. You're going to be able to play if you miss the fairway. It's not, up to your nose. So I think overall, ball striking, second shots, up and down, obviously always in an open. The smart golfer has a chance to win over the guy who might win the athletic competition, who's the best physical talent out there. So I think it's a more wide open field. But what do you think of Birkdale as it sits within the rota?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with you on the best course in England. I think it falls in a long list of these open golf courses that it's the 1 week a year. As you said, I don't really think that there's a quote-unquote type of golfer, and that's why that's interesting that you said that as well. I mean, there's not the, Aaron Hills and you bomb it. There's not an Augusta and your short game's got to be on. I've always loved that this week, we can see a Darren Clark win. We can see Tom Watson nearly win. You could see a 50-year-old player go out there and have a great week and have a chance to do it. I mean, we saw it with Greg Norman. This is what makes the Open to me so unique and so fun is – distance is never really a thing. I've always said when you go over to Scotland, I was there a few weeks ago, you don't even have to look at the number on the scorecard because it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's winds in your face on a 350-yard par four. It plays 450. If a 500-yard par four is downwind, you're hitting driver wedge. I love that, and that's what I really, really like about Birkdale is it feels, troony, where, you don't have to necessarily overpower it. You've just got to be smart, as you said. I mean, Tiger, Tiger wins an Open, hits one driver. I mean, to me, that's the best example and explanation of how you can do this. As you said, if you're smart, if you play this intelligently and don't take on anything you shouldn't take on, you've really, really got a chance. And to me, that's why, there might be 100 guys, 120 guys that could win this.
Yeah, you said that about Tiger, and so if you had, 16 minutes with the over-under for Tiger getting mentioned in the podcast, you win. Congratulations. The one thing about Tiger and Jack, that obviously their major title total is 1 and 2, and there are 32 of them, but what makes them significant to me was always their 15th club in the bag was their brain. Their golf brain was awesome. They outthought a lot of people on the golf course. And it was mental strength, but also strategy, way to play the game against another golfer, and the mental portion of a hit-the-head matchup, if you will, with a great player. I think for me, that's one of the keys to success. Who is mentally strong? And it doesn't mean a game plan. It means sticking with that game plan on hole 4 and knowing when, okay, I've got to ratchet out of that and go aggressive. And I think the guy who thinks his way around this golf course and doesn't get bored with, okay, I really want to hit my driver. No? Your game plan is you're driving 2 iron. You big muscle 2 iron. or your four hybrid or whatever your game plan is, stick with it here. Because once you start to hit driver, you try to fit golf balls into places they don't fit, and then you start to make fives and sixes, and there's no par fives to play catch-up on. So mental strength is big, and that's why we've seen some older golfers over the last 20 years play well and win the Open Championship, or the Open, I'm sorry.
And you mentioned you're, are you a 12 handicap now?
I am 12.5. I got my nice little email on the 15th of the month. It tells me I'm 12.5. Could I play to that 12.5 right now? Not a chance in heck, but that's where we're living.
Well, so Mark Loomis was telling me a great story. Of course, you know, the producer at ABC for a while and my producer at Fox. And I talked to him about you yesterday because I told him I was going to get a chance to catch up with you. He told me a great story, and I was going to see if you could kind of explain it to me. You were playing La Costa back in like 1997. He said it was you and Loomy and I think Peter Allis. And he said, you know, you had kind of a wonky little swing. And Peter Allis maybe gave you a couple of digs about your golf swing?
Correct. Peter told me I should go play lefty. Well, first he said I should play tennis. Then he should say I should go play lefty, which was perhaps the impetus to learn how to swing golf club better. Yeah, I got the golf club way back behind me and very flat. And this Sirik-like moves to get back to a position where I could return the club to the face. And trust me, it ain't perfect by any stretch of the imagination now, but it's better and more repeatable. And it intimidated me playing with Loomis, who, as you know, is a terrific player from his Vanderbilt days. And we go out, and this is a couple years later, working with some of the ESPN guys. We're out at Papalua when it was the Mercedes Championships, and we get to go out because the hours were so late and so short on TV. And you get to play one of the golf courses out in Hawaii with Andy North and Ian Baker Finch and whoever else was working with us at that point. And you're like, okay, great. We have five major championships out here. I think Curtis was with us that one day. Like, okay, we got five major championships out here, and then me. That's the most intimidating darn thing in the world. But being around those guys helped force me to get better at the game. And I still love it. Don't pretend to be good. It's not a game that I'm going to go run out there and play in Tahoe. It's the celebrity golf shoot out there to put my game out in front of folks. But I love it. When we get vacation in northern Michigan, I like to get up early in the morning and go play 18 holes and come back and enjoy the rest of the day with family. There's nothing like the game. My daughter has started playing a little bit. She's a teenager. And is there anything better than sitting out there for a half hour and just chipping or just putting or just trying to say, okay, I'm going to force myself to hit a bunch of hooks here today. I'm going to stand up here and turn the ball right to left. No matter what, figure it out. To me, there's great joy and fun in doing it, and I still absolutely love it. So I'm still embarrassed to play a little bit. That's why probably he hasn't invited me to play golf with him. But maybe I can use you as my entree. We can all get together and play sometime soon.
It would be fun. I would love for you to like stripe one down the middle in front of Peter Allis and be like, see, I can do it now. I'm glad I didn't do the tennis thing. You know,
hey Shane, I'm sorry. You mentioned Peter. I just want to mention Peter real quick. I love that man. You know, Peter's dad, Percy, played in the Open going back in the 20s, and then I think he missed one, and then he played in 31, I want to say, it's either 29 or 31. But there were a few Opens that weren't played because of the war, but Percy Allis was in the Open for a long stretch, then Peter Allis was in the Open for a long stretch, and then Peter broadcast the Open. I think we're something like 80-plus Opens in a row that an Allis, either Percy, the dad, or Peter, the son, has been a part of the Open, whether playing or commentating. BBC lost the rights last year for the full coverage. Sky has the rights over here now. But the BBC still does 2 hours of highlights in prime time. Peter does that. That man he's been like the living encyclopedia for me for two decades of this championship. And you mentioned a name, like, out of nowhere, and Peter's like, oh, yeah, I played with him. Oh, my dad played with him. Oh, yeah, oh, we did this with him and that with him. And he has seen this thing grow so massively, and he's a treat. I'm sad that American viewers don't get to hear him the way they used to, but he's one of a kind, and I think when you think of watching the Open on TV, you think of people like Jim McKay from back in the day, but also that voice of Peter Allis, and you mentioned him, and just wanted to share that with everyone, what a special guy he was, and how special his family has been to the Open over the years.
And also, the hands down the best Hall of Fame speech of all time. If you've never watched that, go to YouTube, pull it up, and just go to the end. You don't even have to watch the whole thing. Just go to the end, and trust me, you will be. It's worth it. It is worth the 5 minutes. He's unbelievable. I was going to ask you, you know, it's an interesting time in golf. We've had 35 events this year. We've had just four winners that have won multiple times. The last seven major winners have all been first-time winners. We haven't had anybody repeat or anybody win a second major over the last seven. Is this a good thing for golf, or do you feel like the sport really needs someone to kind of take the reins? And not necessarily, I mean, you know, everybody talks Tiger. I mean, who's the next Tiger? But somebody to take the reins and just be dominant, even if it's for 6 months, 8 months, a year, because it's really been since, you know, we've seen Dustin do it, but you know, people measure all this stuff on majors. It's kind of been since Rory back in 14.
Right. You just took the answer out of the mouth. You're exactly right, Shane. It's good for us. And by us, I mean the people who are nerds. You know, the people who are going to wake up and watch the tournament from Morocco on Golf Channel. You know, for those of us who will put the game on any time and watch it and absolutely love it, it's great because it is truly wide open week to week. Did you have Brooks Koepka winning in Aaron Hills? Oh, yeah, if you want to mention all the guys who hit it. Yeah, but you weren't thinking that was going to happen. So those things can happen. And now when a major championship starts, let's forget what we mentioned earlier about this golf course and the layout here, bringing a lot of people in the mix. When we go to Quail Hollow, there's a big group of guys you can say have a chance to win a major championship. So for the game, that's really good. But to get my mom to watch, to get somebody who's a hardcore NBA fan to watch, you need a superstar to develop, to dominate, and either be unbelievably likable or have a little bit of, I don't like him, he's a bad guy. And you're not likely to get that with most of the guys who are out here right now. DJ had a great run. You know, looked like leading up to the Masters, he would never lose again. You mentioned Rory. Spieth, we had win back-to-back majors and get on the tee of the 72nd hole at St. Andrews 2 years ago with a chance still to get into that playoff and win a third major so in a row. So we've got all those guys who've had their little runs. Jason, I just saw Jason Day this morning. And Jason Day's run wasn't all that long ago. Where you go, oh my God, you ever going to lose again? So you've got all these guys with these stretches and these moments, and they're fabulous, but nobody's been able to follow it up except for maybe Rory. And Rory had the run you mentioned with a couple of majors, then puts on the sprint here to win the FedEx Cup at the end of the year last year. He's got the most consistent stretches. And then what do you say about Rory coming in here? Well, he's missed the last couple of cuts. Not staying out of the top 10. Missed cuts at European Tour events. One that he hosted and then the Scottish. So where is he? It would help the game if somebody got on a dominant run. But to think Tiger Woods is walking through that door to use the Rick Pitino line, that's probably not happening here anytime soon. And we just have to understand this is where golf is for the moment and celebrate the guys who are good. It would be helpful, Shane, if we saw, whether it was here or at Quail Hollow, like three or four of those names get on the leaderboard and just have a Sunday. Give me a Sunday where it's like Pinehurst when Payne beat Phil, where everybody's right around the top of the board. And go, oh, wow, this is incredible. Or even the Open that Mickelson won. You go look at the leaderboard there, Tiger finishes T6, you got names everywhere. But we could really use a Sunday like that, for sure.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that when you finished up. I rewatched Golf Channel aired the 13 Open a couple of, I think it was last week or the week before last, and I was watching it. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't a long time ago. I'd completely forgotten how good that that leaderboard was. I mean, it was Tiger and Phil and Adam Scott, and it was everybody that you would have wanted on a leaderboard on Sunday. I'm like salivating. It was like Zinger and Curtis and those guys doing it. And I literally called them right after I got done watching them. How much fun was that to call? And I'm with you. You know, that kind of shootout was fun. I mean, Stinson Phil was fun as well, but you know, it was a two-man race. And I feel like, you know, when it gets to be a two-man race, sometimes if they're not fans of those players, people aren't going to tune in. And, you know, something fun that's new to the game, you know, especially over the last year, is that Olympic coverage, that was a lot of fun to watch as well. You guys, NBC, did a great job with it. And, you know, well, the one question I think a lot of people had with the Olympics and with golf was, will they add anything to it? Could we get a team event there? I mean, I know basketball just added the 3-on-3. Do you feel like there's a chance we could get something, you know, team-y, you know, involved with golf and the Olympics? And do you feel like it's something that would be really good for the game?
It's a great question. You brought up a couple of things. I want to hit the Olympic one first with you. We know the Olympics will be in the Games in 2020. When they were on board for 16, 20 was part of that deal. And in Tokyo, I think it'll be fabulous. And it looks like it'll be on board for 2024 here. So the Olympic golf connection seems to be there and building. Good sign. As far as the competition, I would really love to see 54 holes instead of 72, and then play 36 holes of a team event with one man, one woman, and then play the ladies event for 54 holes. Or even if you went to 36 and then do the 2 days of 36, however you want to do it, I just think it would be really cool. It would be something different. We're going to see at the 2020 Tokyo Games men and women in a co-ed event in swimming. How great will that be? And hopefully that will spur a little bit more of that and create just something different and create some uniqueness to the golf competition in the Olympics. I think we saw when they did they call it the Sixes, that it was on Golf Channel earlier this year in England. We saw just something different. We saw the team event this year in New Orleans, something different. There's the reality that stroke play every week needs to just be freshened up a little bit. And I think that's helpful. The question is now, can you get the biggest names to do all that stuff? And that would be fun. I'll let you in on a little secret you mentioned, which is cool about Golf Channel. Go back and watch the old Open. Dan Hicks and I were just talking today about watching Stenson and Mickelson from last year, and you got wrapped up in that. It was so much fun. I usually sit around and watch events that I've covered before, especially years later. But I got caught on that 13 Open that you were just talking about, and I sent a group text to Judy Rankin, Dottie Pepper, Scott Van Pelt, Sean McDonough, Curtis Strange, Paul Azinger, Andy North. I think that's everybody. Mike McQuaid, who was our producer. Because we were all part of that broadcast, and that was one of the most... When you go back and you watch it and you still feel really good about it, that's fun and that's special. And that was a great time to be with those people. And we only did one a year, and we've all stayed pretty close. And it was just neat to reconnect with all of those folks who were part of that broadcast, because that was a ton of fun and is right up there with a whole bucket load of memories that I've been able to collect over the last 20 years of doing the Open. And that's why I got really lucky that the timing of my arrival at NBC was just over a year ago, so I could keep this streak going and make this year 21 in a row. And now do it with Dan and Johnny and Gary Koch and all the Golf Channel people. We've got, we've got like half the Claret Jug on our announcing roster this year. We've got Faldo with us, Johnny, Justin Leonard, David Duval, Marco Mara. So we've got a decent section of the Claret Jug covered with jackets and ties this week too.
Yeah, I was going to say you got to check extra bags for all the Claret Jugs you guys are bringing over.
By the way, I'll post this on my Twitter. I posted this on my Twitter account on Monday. Stenson came back with the Claret Jug, delivered it on Monday in a Mercedes ride that looks completely out of the movies. It is the sickest thing I've ever seen. It's actually really cool. I looked there when he pulled up, but I saw the car in the parking lot, and I posted it on Twitter. I'm not to run to Twitter or Instagram and do that stuff, but I put it up there. It's just sweet, and it's kind of good to see Edson enjoying the final moments of his year as a champion golfer and driving in style, too.
What sport for you is the easiest to call, and which sport for you is the hardest to call?
You know what? I think there's an easiest to call and then an easiest to call well. I think golf can be really easy to call if you just kind of say, here's Shane Bacon's second shot 16. You're fine. That's good. But when you can add the nuance and the context to it, and that comes with time. Dan and Jim Nance, and these guys have done it for a long, long time. You work with your analyst, and you know how everything plays out. It becomes hard, because one of the great compliments you get when you call golf is people say, man, I really enjoy listening to you. I'll fall asleep watching you guys on Sunday. Like, wait a minute. You're telling me that my work puts you to sleep, and that's a good thing. But it just lets you know that you fit the event. It's kind of calm and relaxed, and it's really easy going, and you want to keep it on. And it'll come back to you when it matters, obviously. So the biggest compliment can be that you make the job look easy, and in fact, it's not. I still think the hardest is football because there are so many moving pieces. You know, you have 22 guys on the field. At any point in a football game, one of 100 players or coaches or GMs could become the story of the day, and you've got to be ready for it. So I think from the announcing perspective, that's the hardest to prepare for. Golf, I think if you have a terrific producer like Tommy Rohr that we have here, you mentioned Mark Loomis. I work with Mike McQuaid at ESPN, Brent Hacker at ESPN here as well. We know Lance Barrow at CBS, legendary for what he does over the years. When you work with somebody who's terrific at doing this, it makes it really easy on the announcers, and then it becomes an easy job to stay out of the way and steer the boat. So I think once you've done a lot of golf, golf can be the easiest thing to do and hopefully do well and put people to sleep.
As long as they're falling asleep, you're doing an excellent job. I have a few quick hitters, then I'll let you go. I know you got to get back to work and get prepared for the Open. You're all of a sudden, let's say you're all of a sudden now, you're 22 years old. You're Mike Tirico, 22 years old, but you have all your work you've done. You have to make a reel. What's the first thing you put on your reel, and what's the first golf moment that's on your reel?
First golf moment is Vanderbilt, 99 Carnoustie. I have talked about that more than any event I've been a part of. The first thing that should jump out of in my life in golf is Tiger completing the career Grand Slam at St. Andrews. Like, seriously, think about that. And that was the first time that a golfer completed the career Grand Slam live on television, because it has happened in the live TV era before that. And it's at the home of golf. Are you kidding me? It was unbelievable. But the Vanderbilt thing was just one of a kind. And start to finish, there are 100 things that I've talked about and still talk about. Matter of fact, last night at dinner, we had dinner with Justin Leonard, Todd Lewis, Rich Lerner, and a couple of other guys from Golf Channel, and we started talking about the Vanderbilt. And 20 minutes later, we're still into stories about it. So that's the one. That was just an incredible thing to be a part of. I would say non-golf, and it's not because of the score or the scope of the event. It was the return game for the New Orleans Saints to the Superdome after Hurricane Katrina on Monday Night Football. President Bush was there. A lot of the people in government, Dr. Condoleezza Rice, others who helped in getting New Orleans rebuilt were there. U2 and Green Day played before the game. This is a week 3 NFL game. You got U2 and Green Day playing. It's like a mini Super Bowl. All the first responders were there. The building was full 2 hours before. People were outside the building 3.5 hours before waiting to unveil the Superdome again. Shane, 55 weeks before, people came into that dome hoping to stay alive. And now they came back to celebrate. And why it sticks with me forever is that it taught me that sports is more than just a toy shop. Sports matter. And sports matter to cities and can connect. People aren't running around with Boston Philharmonic t-shirts on, but they're running around with Tom Brady Patriots hats, jerseys, and Boston Red Sox hats on. Sports give cities and communities an identity. And that game was New Orleans telling the rest of the world, we're open for business again, and we can have a good time, and we did survive and will thrive. And to be a part of that, Saints back in New Orleans, back in the Superdome was the line I used when the game started. That's one of the very few pictures I have in my office of a specific event that I covered. I'll never forget that. I put that up there because I'm proud of being a part of it and proud of what it represents for how sports matter to all of us as fans.
Well, that obviously has to be one. I loved your Vanderbilt line. You know what's under your underrated call was Duvall's 59. Great call. Simple. You got to the point. Greatest final round in golf history. Loomis mentioned it to me. I watched it the other day. That was a great call. You just laid it out there. I really enjoyed it.
And the backstory of that is there was a strike with ABC technicians. We were working with a very different crew than we normally worked, and Mark was part of the group along with Jack Graham, our producer, who's now one of our execs here at Golf Channel, that gave us a chance to cover the event properly without our regular group there. And here's Duval. And Duval, who I work with now here at Golf Channel, gives me grief all the time because I interview David. And as you know, David can have a dry sense of humor. And he is a smart guy. David finishes, I think, 8 or 9 groups before the end. So he's got a lot of time. So I'm trying to find out what he's going to do. He said, well, David, here you are. You're finished. What are you going to do between now and then? And he's like, in a typical smart-ass answer, well, I'm not going to go work on my game. Dude, I got you. Work with me here. And it's funny. And we laugh about that all the time still today. It was pretty special, even though we've seen a 58, 59 in the final round to win. It was pretty sweet. It was great to be a part of that.
You're ponying up $50. You're going to go watch a golf event. Which threesome, you could pick any threesome, which threesome are you watching? You could do current players.
I can pick the three.
You get to pick the three.
Yeah. EJ, because I just love how ridiculously far he hits it, and the ball like stays in the air and waves at everybody else. Damn, you only give me three. I'm going to say Rory. I want to say Jordan because I love the way Jordan isn't as long. He's long. He's not as long as other guys, but he's still right there. I love his fight. I love his determination to get the ball in the hole. So I'm going to pick him over Rory, even though I want to see Rory in there. So you're only giving me three because it's only $50 and I'm cheap. DJ, Spieth, and Mickelson.
If you could only play one golf course the rest of your life, which one are you playing?
Oh, which course? Barton Hills, which is the club I belong to in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's a Donald Ross course designed and opened in 1919. I play it every day, and I absolutely love it because it's just comfortable. If it's a course around the country that you're talking about, of course Augusta, but Pebble Beach still kind of touches your soul. If you're asking globally, St. Andrews.
St. Andrews is just such an experience. I played it 3 weeks ago, and I mean, it was, you know, you just when you make that turn, when you get to 12T and you start walking back to the town and the town keeps getting bigger and bigger in your view, you know, it just doesn't get old. It is the best. This is the last one, and I'll let you go. And I'm only asking this because I mentioned it on Twitter today, and I'm just interested in your thoughts. I gave my top five favorite athlete to watch list that I got to watch, and it's off the heels, of course, of what Federer just did at Wimbledon because he's a ridiculous person that's not a real human. Do you have a top five athlete list that you just enjoy to watch? And it can be, you know, I mean, it can be really any sport.
Yep. Jordan. Incredible. Just incredible. Different type of player. Manning, because, and Peyton, not Eli or Archie, although I love them both, or Cooper. Peyton, because he changed the way quarterbacks play. That whole line of scrimmage song and dance that everybody does now, nobody did. You guys changed plays at the line. But they didn't make it this cat and mouse game. So Jordan, Peyton, Tiger. Tiger hit shots. Why Tiger was so special to watch, Shane? Tiger hit shots that nobody else could hit. And you thought that every time he got over a golf ball, there was a chance to see something you haven't seen before. That's why Mickelson's in my top five, my top three for $50, because Phil's the same way. He's going to hit a shot the likes of which you haven't seen before. You know, baseball is hard because of that McGuire-Sosa era. What McGuire did in baseball was nuts back then, but you have to put an asterisk on all that. I'd go back and say Jim Brown, not because I'm a Syracuse alum, that's part of it, but Jim Brown was great in two sports. He's a Hall of Famer in football and lacrosse. And then the last one for me was Gretzky, because Gretzky was great in front of the net, and he was the best ever behind the net. He made more plays from his office with the big ice sheet in Edmonton from behind the net. And when you watch great hockey players, you watch them away from the puck always found Gretzky, and he was the calmest player on the ice. So that would be my five. I know it goes down the line of some of the best ever, but that's why, because they're the best ever. And they did things that other guys still haven't done, and people stay awake every hour of the day trying to figure out how can I do that the way they did it.
Well, it's a good list. I mean, I feel like that's a goat-heavy list, but, I mean, that's the people you would want to watch. I mean, when you watch Tiger Woods hit a golf shot, it was a different feeling, and it was, again, I mean, we talked about, you know, people trying to, quote-unquote, get there, and, you know, it's just, it's something between the ears with certain athletes, and they just do it different. I mean, that's what you see with Federer all the time. Mike, I appreciate the time.
Yeah, hey, Shane. Just one last thing on Tiger. At the Ryder Cup, I was backstage when I did the ceremony, the closing ceremony. At the Ryder Cup, those guys were so excited to have Tiger as an assistant as part of the captain team that Davis put together. And it really struck me there. All these guys grew up wanting to be like Tiger because of the shots he hit and the passion for the game that he showed. And they got a chance to be on his team for probably the first time in their lives. And it really struck me there how this generation of golfer is the Tiger generation. If he did anything, maybe he wasn't bringing minorities to the game, he brought great athletes and cool to golf. And that's why what you asked before is so true. We have so many guys who are good enough to win majors right now.
And the most depressing thing I've heard today, Tiger has dropped out of the top 1,000 in the world rankings, which, again, is just... It just doesn't even seem like a thing that can happen. You know, it just doesn't even seem like it's comprehensible. You know, you're going, no, that's not supposed to be. That is not supposed to be.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, Mike, I appreciate it. You said in your New York Times profile, I'm not famous. And you know what? I don't think that's true. I think you are kind of famous. I just want to let you know that. I hope you guys have a great Open Championship. It's going to be awesome. You're doing so many hours. I hope you guys get some sleep as well.
Yeah, it's 50 hours. What 50 hours? Come on. What do you do over here? If you were here for the Open, would you be sleeping?
No, I'd be playing. I'd be playing and watching. Playing and watching. Right when you get done with the broadcast, see if there's a nine-holer around.
That's right. Fish and chips, a pint or two, and a whole lot of golf shots. We'll all be good. Golf Channel and NBC all week. You have to watch or else we'll come knock on your door.
Oh, trust me, it'll be watching. It is the best viewing experience in the States. You know what? It's the sneaky best experience on the West Coast, because what I do is I'll do like a midday nap if the good groups are going out, you know, at 11 p.m. on the West Coast, and I'll stay up through that group, then sleep for like 2 hours, and then get the morning through. Now my schedule's all screwed up, and my wife thinks I'm crazy. But it is one of my favorite things to do is Open Championship weekend. It's so unbelievable.
Well, there's that nap thing again, but I'm going on the air. I'm doing the 10:30 Wednesday night West Coast golf for 5 hours. I'm gonna just start on Twitter, get some hashtag going. I know we'll have like an up all night, open all night, or the open all night, or something like that. But we'll just get a little cult group of people on the Twitter thing, and we'll have some fun. It's all in good fun, and we're very lucky to do what we do. And I love hanging out with you, man. Congrats on all your success, too. Really happy for you.
I appreciate it. We'll be excited to watch. Thanks so much.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
Well, that was a lot of fun. Many thanks to Mike Tirico. Again, just a reminder, their coverage Thursday, Friday is 1:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. 1:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern on NBC. And then on the weekend, it goes 4 to 7 a.m. on Golf Channel. And then 7 to 3 on NBC and 7 to 2 on NBC on Sunday. So you'll have plenty of golf to watch over the weekend. Just a reminder, this week's episode was brought to you by Ogio, some of the best golf bags out there and some of the best backpacks out there. The Renegade backpack is an unbelievable one. I carry it everywhere I go. I travel quite a bit over the summer, and I couldn't imagine doing it without my Renegade Ogio backpack. The golf bags are great. The backpacks are great. Their travel gear is unbelievable. Just go to their website, ogio.com, O-G-I-O.com, and just browse. I promise you, you'll pick up a couple things. Totally worth it. And that'll do it for this week's Clubhouse episode. I hope you guys are excited for the Open. And we will come back next week with more guests and some recaps.